Nothing on this show is a recommendation to buy or sell securities. While stocks and the stock market will be discussed on this program, check with your financial advisor or a professional before investing. Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show, coming to you from the Dupree Financial Group studios on Main Street. Today we have Adarsh Meshru, Mike Johnson, Philip Sexton, and Tom Dupree with us. It's a full house, and here's our host, Tom Dupree.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. Guys, the market's been sort of flattish here lately, but here's an article that somebody pulled up about stock market timing, why the odds are strongly against it, and why investors should fear missing the upside, not avoiding the downside. Okay, we're in a market where it's all but a given that the market's going to crash. You know, everybody's been talking that way, that, you know, when the Fed pulls away the punch bowl, or the dollar devalues, or this happens or that happens. And it seems like if it were a foregone conclusion that this was going to happen, it would have already happened. The market basically would have already gone down to reflect the fact that it's supposed to go down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and certainly I've been expecting it or thinking it might happen. You know, you look at the, what was the last economic report? The economy was down 32.9%. And, you know, there's just a big hole in the economy. Lots of jobs lost, not coming back, some of them, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Small business is gone. You got chaos in major cities. And yet, the engine, or at least something that should reflect the engine of commerce, which is the stock market, continues to remain pretty well elevated, which just goes to show that when we think we know what the conventional wisdom is, we really don't. You know, Adarsh, you've been a studier of this for a long time. What's going on? I mean, you know, and can you time the market? It seems like you can't.
Right. So what you said about the economy is actually true. The economy is suffering. You know, the situation on the ground is not very good. I mean, if you just go out, you see so many businesses have shut down. But that is not being reflected in the stock market, and there's a big reason behind that. And that reason is that the stock market does not really reflect the small businesses that you see around you. The stock market today, as it is, reflects huge multi-trillion dollar companies now that do business not just, you know, in your local area, but do business all over the world. So it's not really a reflection of your immediate surroundings. And that's why you see this dichotomy, which really, if you take the S&P 500 and if you look at...
But let me just ask you quickly. If enough small businesses cease to function, those people are consumers also.
Right.
Wouldn't there ultimately be a drop in business to the big businesses because the lifeblood of the economy, the small businesses, are not doing well?
It would, yes. We haven't seen that to a large extent yet. Now, if this situation goes on for 3 or 4 more months, then I think you'll start seeing that. But as of now, we haven't seen that because there's a lot of money that's been pumped in through fiscal stimulus, primarily. Monetary stimulus, it's hard to really argue or, you know, figure out where that money is going. But fiscal stimulus, we know that a lot of money was pumped in immediately, and perhaps there's more coming here very soon. And that's kept demand afloat.
But the market knows this.
Right.
The market knows that there's funny money in the economy. The market knows that the small businesses aren't doing well. The market knows that there will come a point where there will be no more stimulus because we can't afford it.
Right.
And yet you would think that the market would already take that into account and basically drop itself based on that. But it seems as if either the market's in denial and everybody realizes it and the market's stupid and we're smart, or the market's telling us something that we all don't yet know.
Well, I'd argue
like
that
it did in 99.
I'd say that the market is already taking it into account. So when you look at the S&P 500, that's really not the best reflection of the market. Really, a better reflection of the market would be all the stocks in the New York Stock Exchange, you know, which is over 4,000 stocks. So when you look at those stocks, they are nowhere close to their all-time highs.
Right.
If you look at the Russell 2000, it's where it was in 2017.
Okay.
So if you look at the broader market, apart from the top 10 companies in the U.S., which is what is driving the S&P 500, if you look at the other 490 stocks, they're really nowhere close to their highs. Yes.
And I think to add to that too, you know, that's where the market's coming in on those, to what Adarsh was saying, and kind of weighing what those risks could be. You know, you look at there's real estate companies out there that are still, you know, 20-30% off their highs. You look at airlines, restaurants, retailers, like all these sectors are 60+% off their highs. So it's this weighing mechanism. And I think to what you're saying about small business, you know, that's the biggest employer of American people out there. And when you look at from a stimulus measure, the PPP loans and everything, you know, I think the bigger risk is not necessarily continuing to pump money into it as much as it is a loss of all that capital that was deployed to create that small business mechanism. You know, if you, to what you were saying, if you had a big chunk of small businesses, you know, let's say 20% of small businesses went under, you know, that's fatal, because not only do you have all those jobs lost, you know, now the banks can't step up to help, you know, any small businesses moving forward. That would cause more need for government intervention than what you're seeing today, in my opinion.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And the difficulty is that once, you know, these small businesses close, it's very hard for them to reopen.
It's impossible to get a business going.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was... I've been through it. I know how long it takes, how much longer it takes than you think it's going to take, how long it is to become profitable, much longer than you think it's going to be. And in this climate, it would be even harder.
Right.
One of the points it's making in this article, too, is it distinguishes between market timing and asset allocation, because market timing is a short-term bet, if you will. You're making a bet that something's going to happen and the market's going to react a certain way. So you would move all to cash and then back in based on these different things. Asset allocation is a long-term plan, because you do the analysis on the investments, but it's based on a long-term horizon. And it's interesting, some of the statistics they put in here. In order for market timing to pay off versus a buy and hold approach, it gives three different ways. This was a study that was published that 80%, in order for market timing to pay off, you have to get 80% of the bull market and 50% of bear markets correct. So you got to call, because it's not just a call on one. It's not just a call on avoiding the bear. It's also a call on being able to take part in the bull market.
Yeah, when you get in and out of the market, you're making two decisions.
Right.
Basically.
Right. And so 80% of the bull predicting that correct, and 50% of the bear markets, or 70% of the bull, 80% of the bear, or 60% of the bull, and 90% of the bear markets.
Yeah.
Basically, almost perfection on both sides that you have to predict in order for that to be more profitable than long-term buy and hold.
That's without considering tax consequences.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And another big hurdle is, and we saw it in March, that the highest returns, so if you look over a period of volatility, let's just look at March or in 08 and 09, the highest return days during those periods are going to be real close to the worst return days. So the best and the worst returns cluster together.
Yeah.
So like in 08 and 09, you look at on October 13th of 08, you had almost a 12% up day. 2 days later, you had a 9% drop. 10 days later, you had an 11% up day. March was no different than that. You had that same kind of volatility.
Seesaw.
Yeah. So to time the market, you're literally talking about one day in, one day out, one day in, and being able to predict
who
that.
Who can do that?
It's an impossibility. So when we're putting together an investment portfolio, which is very different than speculation, you know, this is long-term investing, you know, it takes into account that you're going to have volatility, and that's kind of built into the allocation of the portfolio with bonds or different asset classes.
I think the funny thing there too, and where he's talking about you've got to hit 80% of the bull and 50% of the bear. I mean, to me, I think about trying to do that just based upon, you know, reading the news, understanding the markets like you do, and, you know, to compare it to something, a meteorologist.
Yeah.
How many times do you check the weather report and they say there's a 50% chance of rain today?
Yep.
That one will tick you off more than anything.
That's right.
It's like, well, it may rain, but it might not rain. You know, like, what if a meteorologist had to hit 80% of his rainy days on the head?
Yeah. That's
wouldn't
right.
happen.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why a buy and hold strategy is really kind of the only way to go.
It says here that this article, by the way, is by Les Wright. It's on medium.com. The upside of bull markets is historically 5x the average gains versus the average bear market losses. Yet most investors focus and fret over downturn losses and ignore the bigger risk of missing upside gains. Some of the largest gains happen right after the largest downturns, yet most investors move to cash during downturns. How many times have we seen that?
Mm-hmm.
And only return after missing the subsequent large upside gains. That happens a lot. I would argue that people are more worried about losing than they are desirous of gaining.
Right. It's more painful, and they've done studies on that too. People will forego future reward to avoid the short-term pain.
That's right.
And that's just human nature. But it and that's all markets are, is human nature and emotion, and that's what you see playing out during times of volatility.
The pandemic is causing some companies to switch to variable dividends. This is by Lawrence Strauss and Barron's. Many companies, especially in the U.S., pay a fixed dividend, but that could be changing as the pandemic has forced a slew of companies to cut or suspend their payouts. Pioneer Natural Resources, ticker PXD, CEO Scott Sheffield told analysts during the company's second quarter earnings call We expect to have a variable dividend and a policy put together for the year 2021 and payable in 2022. Is this mainly among oil companies, or are we seeing this with lots of companies?
I think what you're seeing more so than a variable dividend policy is dividend suspensions.
Why does this say variable
dividends? Well, this is talking about variable dividends for a few companies, but you know, the problem with variable dividends is
that mean it's just going to be whatever we want it to be?
Well, you peg it to either an earnings ability or a cash flow ability or something like that. But the problem with that is that inherently it's going to make you incentivize you to do something over another thing. Now, we were actually talking about this morning, and Brad, our youngster, he asked, why not put it, peg it to, all right, we're going to pay 50% of free cash flow or something like that. I said, well, the problem with that is that it incentivizes the shareholders to vote maybe the board members in that are going to say, well, we don't need to be spending $2 billion in CapEx. Maybe we just need to spend $1 billion in CapEx.
And have more free cash flow.
And have more free cash flow and have a higher dividend. So that's the problem with potentially a variable dividend policy. What you're seeing a lot, though, in the market isn't, I wouldn't call it a cutting of dividends, more so as it is a suspension of dividends.
You look at Disney.
Yeah.
Did they
suspend it? It was 6 months that they suspended it back in March or April, I guess, 6 months.
Yeah.
And it's you've seen it with, because no company is designed for a shutdown. Philip says something this morning I thought it was great. He said companies can handle a slowdown but not a shutdown, and that's absolutely right. The market has never seen something like we're in right now. You look at actions we've been taking in the portfolio are to address this issue, because if companies shift more to variable dividends or suspend dividends, you have to look at total return, which is price movement and dividends. It was interesting. We saw it with BP the other day. They cut their dividend by, 50%?
Something like that.
50%. Yeah.
And 50%. Still got over 5% yield.
But the day that they cut the dividend, and the dollar amount that they cut on the dividend was like $1.44 or something, $1.40. The day that they announced it, the stock was up $1.44. The day they almost what they reduced the dividend by. And so from a total return perspective, if you owned BP at that time, you basically got 6 months worth of dividends that day. They sped up that dividend to you essentially
in terms of market price.
Right. And so the stock prices react as the dividends fluctuate. So you have to be able to be invested in something that can also take advantage of the stock price appreciation.
Well, by doing that, the market assumed that the money's there. They're just not going to pay it to you in the form of a dividend.
Right.
But they reflected that money in terms of market price.
Right.
If they thought they were hurt, they took a major write down, but I don't know whether it was based on mark to market of oil properties, oil and gas properties, but they're still cash flow positive. But then they make this statement that they're going to move away from oil and gas into low carbon, energy. Well, that's sun and wind.
Mm-hmm.
You're an oil and gas company. What the hell are you doing? Come on. It's political correctness can only get you so far.
Well, and part of what the market was seeing there too, to your point, Tom, is that the BP uses a term called gearing ratio, which is a debt ratio basically. And it was running at 38%, I believe, and their long-term goal was 25 to 30%. So this,
they wanted to get their leverage down.
Yeah. So this is the future of the company at stake at this point.
All right, that's a good place to take a break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with the second half of the Tom Dupree Show with Philip Sexton, Adarsh Meshru, and Mike Johnson, powered by Dupree Financial Group, coming to you from our studios on Main Street. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show for the second half of the hour with Adarsh, Philip, and Mike. And here's your host, Tom Dupree.
It's Tom Dupree. Welcome back to the show. We're kind of talking about oil companies here, something we used to understand. I think we still do. So we were talking about BP a minute ago. Now we're talking about Exxon. This is an article by Erwin Seba, and Exxon to suspend company match to employee retirement plans in October. So BP sticking it to the shareholders, Exxon sticking it to the employees. ExxonMobil Corp told employees it would begin suspending the employer match to retirement savings plans early October. Given the current business environment, the company is taking steps to reduce costs, according to a copy of the message seen by Reuters. All employees will apply to all employees covered by the savings plan, effective October 1, 2020. Now, you know, I don't know about that, because you can, you know, cut your payouts to shareholders and they'll get over it. But you're dealing with your employees, which is the heart and soul of the company. And, you know, I don't know about that.
I think comparing this to what BP did, you know, like you said, when BP cut the dividend, they laid out a path forward of what the plans were.
Yes.
And the shareholders, you either sell the shares if you're not on board with the path, or you say, I like this path, and you hold or buy more, whatever you may do. The problem with this path forward, to your point, Tom, is that Exxon comes out and says, yeah, we're just going to cut it from the employees to make sure that the shareholders still get their cut. What ends up happening, you know, that's factored into a pay package. You know, you're looking at, okay, I get 6% of my salary matched if I put it into a 401k, or 7%, whatever. I think it's 7% if they put 6% in. And so, you know, you think if you're making $100,000 salary, that's an extra $7,000 that you just got cut from you. And let's say that BP is able to, you know, to continue to match. Well, they get the better talent at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that this is a very detrimental move on Exxon's part, you know,
big time,
from a future perspective.
It's not just Exxon that's done it. I mean, we know locally there's been companies and institutions that have reduced match. And so from an employee retirement planning standpoint, that puts some people in a tough position. You know, we work closely with participants at UK. And, you know, that's one institution has done that recently. And that's a big part of their compensation.
That's right.
And so they're having to deal with that. The employees are. And that's something we've been having that conversation a lot, you know, with, you know, how to, you know, plan for that. When you're the employee looking at retirement at some point down the road, that's an unexpected turn that you have to compensate for someplace.
To what you're saying there, Mike, is, you know, if you're planning on getting, you know, an extra $6,000 from your employer every single year, and then that goes to zero, well, especially for somebody who's, you know, maybe in their 30s or you know,
yeah,
mid-30s, early 40s, that still has a 20, 30 plus year time horizon on building towards retirement. Well, you think of what $6,000 does over 30 years.
Right.
You know, the lost money that causes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the dangerous thing. And it's just as bad as, you know, when governments go in and fiddle with pensions.
Yeah.
You know, because that sets you back 10 years on when you were going to be able to retire.
Right.
Speaking of pensions, Wall Street Journal article, beleaguered public pension funds make record gains in second quarter. Well, duh. You know. Public pension funds set a 22-year performance record in the second quarter, recovering some but not all of their losses from the first quarter. This is something we've always known. The funny thing with math, if you go down 20%, a 20% return does not make it up. Takes about 40, doesn't it?
If you went down,
I think it 30, takes about 25, 26.
25.
Yeah, 25. Yeah, 25. That's right. Yeah. How did I get that wrong?
50 takes 100.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing with this article, you know, it's talking about before the pandemic, public pensions were already trying to plug large funding holes by pursuing aggressive returns to make up for insufficient government funding in past years and decades. State and local pension funds in the U.S. held $4.05 trillion in aggregate as of March 31, $4.93 trillion less than the cost of promise future obligations, according to Federal Reserve data. So
they're underfunded by $4.93 trillion,
and on top of that, now to try to catch up, you're stretching your neck out even farther going into the pandemic.
Yeah,
you know, which is a very scary situation. You know, and it talks about this a pension, the Tampa firefighter and police pension. You know, it's up 7% for the 12 months ended June 30. They were able to go in and buy up a bunch of, you know, a bunch of stocks, you know, but they're actually a lot better funded than most pensions out there. You know, you look at some other pensions like the California Public Employees Retirement System and the California State Teacher Retirement System. Their fiscal year ended June 30th. The public employees was 4.7% return, while the state teachers was a 3.9% return. Now, the scary thing about this is that you hit a 3.9% return, but you've got a 5% drawdown on the pension. You know, that's the dangerous game.
What we do.
And I think on top of this too, and the last thing that I wanted to point out from this article, with local governments hemorrhaging tax dollars as a result of the pandemic, pension managers have to worry about governments adjusting budgets mid-year, says Keith Brainerd, research director of the National Association of State Retirement Administrators. They're likely to find, oh boy, our revenues are short by X amount, and we're just going to have to contribute less to the pension plans.
Yeah,
this is already happening in Oklahoma, where the Teachers Retirement System executive director Tom Spencer expects to lose out on about $70 million in state sales and income taxes in the fiscal years 2021 and $75 million to $80 million in 2022. The roughly $17 billion fund has more than 70% of what it needs to cover future pensions, Mr. Spencer said. Though the state expects to pay extra over the following 5 years, he estimates the fund will lose the opportunity to earn about $40 million in investment returns. So this is exactly like cutting your 401k match. If states go in and cut budgets, is the loss of future returns on that money crushes you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like what we talked about earlier, you know, the market timing.
Yeah.
You know, this is why you don't try to market time, you know, the loss of potential future returns.
And it's cautionary against trying to play catch up. You know, if anytime you reach for risk, you know, reach out in risk or take on, you know, excess risk for trying to achieve a certain return, you're sticking your neck out there asking to get it hit.
And that's inherently in itself market timing, because when you stick your neck out, you're telling you're making the bet on a timing purpose that the gains will continue for X amount of years. And the problem, and this is where individuals inherently struggle with, is making a plan and sticking to a plan.
Oh yeah,
and this
very hard for people to do.
Yes, and that's where, you know, you look at the people that retired and did it right and had no problems through retirement. You know, we have several clients that through this whole entire pandemic, you know, and they saw the stock market swings in their accounts, but it was all about, I've got a plan, I'm sticking to my plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where if you're able to do that, 9 times out of 10, you will be successful.
Right.
If the market goes up. You want it to keep going up.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's see. What have I got here? Stock market news, live updates. Stock futures lower as July jobs report surprises to the upside. What do we got here?
So the July jobs report came out this morning.
What'd it do?
So what you saw was employers added 1.8 million non-farm payrolls during the month, which actually beat the consensus expectation for 1.48 million new positions in July. It's down from the record 4.8 million added during June. You know, one of the, and your opinion, I'd like to hear too, Adarsh, but one of the things that really, this one surprised me more than the May and June job reports. You know, the one in May was a huge, you know, the economists were thinking we were going to have continued movement up in the unemployment rate, and it actually flipped on them. But, you know, I think anybody with a little common sense talking to their buddies, seeing who was going back to work, could have figured that one out.
Right.
But this one, it actually surprised me, because in my mind, when you were looking at a lot of states, especially in the South, were, you know, for the most of July, were pulling people back out of the labor market. You were starting to see weekly unemployment claims move higher. You know, weekly new unemployment claims move higher, but yet they were still able to lower the unemployment rate. That to me was a bigger surprise.
I wonder if part of that is because people are working part time. I mean, I don't know. I'm just speculating. So
I would highly, I mean, with unemployment up until the end of July, when the unemployment extra benefit went away, it would be a disincentive to work part time.
Yeah, I mean,
could it be that there were so many job losses that anything was going to be an uptick based on, you know, it's just like job market is like a stock market. It's like any kind of market. It can get beat down so far and saturated with losses, and any news or any move is ultimately going to be an uptick.
Well, I mean, you think about if you averaged, I'm not sure what the exact average was for July, but let's say if you averaged 1.3 million new claimants a week over 4 weeks, you know, I get you 5.2 million new claimants. So to get 1.8, you've got to add 7 million jobs.
Right.
You know, so that's quite a bit when you really...
You look around and you wonder where they're coming from, you know, because it doesn't look like, just from where we're sitting, that many people are hiring.
Mm-hmm. Be more on the industrials, tech, you know, like the big, I guess the big...
Yeah.
The big employers.
It seems like from the report that most of the jobs were created in the service sector, restaurants and bars and things. So I don't know. But then they always revise this figure, so I don't know how much difference that'll make. And also the fact that, you know, if you just say that you're not looking for a job, you're counted as employed.
If you quit looking for a job, you're not part of the labor force anymore.
Yeah.
From a calculations.
Right. You're out of it. So you're not considered unemployed.
You're not considered
unemployed. You wouldn't be considered anything.
Yeah.
But it would help the unemployment figure.
Would, it would help the unemployment figure, but it wouldn't help the employment data.
But if you're getting the relief money, you're considered unemployed.
Correct.
So the unemployment number has remained high because they keep pushing that stimulus money through the system.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're making, you know, $600 a week being a cook at your local restaurant, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to go back to being a cook when you can make $1,000 a week, you know, sitting at home.
The thing of it is that is interesting to me is there's still – we haven't had – 25 million people die. They're still out there. They're still consuming something. They need to buy this and that, and they need for somebody to sell it to them. And it's not just going to be Amazon. It's going to, you know, there's going to be local vendors. You look at these restaurants and you don't see that many people in there, and you think, where are these people eating? And what are they eating? Because you go to the grocery store and it doesn't look like it's that full either sometimes. I'm just, you know, are they just fasting?
Well, a lot of people that I know, they're just ordering online. And if you shop at Kroger, you just go curbside pickup.
Yeah.
And then if you shop at Whole Foods, they'll deliver it to your house. So I wonder how much that has to do with just not seeing that many people.
It just makes you wonder if the pandemic is officially declared over with, how much pent-up demand is there going to be of people coming out of the woodworks and saying, I'm going to party now, you know?
Well, I was going to say, you know, auto sales. You know, auto sales have seen a lot of pressure. And that's something that you is inherently needed to get to and from a job, to and from the grocery store, wherever it may be. And that's something that it's a deferred, I would call it deferred CapEx in a sense.
Personal CapEx.
Deferred personal capital expenditure that, you know, you can put it off and put it off and put it off, but eventually it's going to come a point to where you have a car that's worth $1,000. And something's going to break down, and they're going to say it's $2,000 to fix, and it doesn't make sense to own the car anymore. And then that's when, you know, you're going to continue to see, you know, the longer this thing goes in sectors like that, you're going to see this pent-up, you know, demand in certain areas. I think from a vacation standpoint,
oh, man,
that there's going to be pent-up demand in vacation travel moving forward.
All these people not going on cruises, you know, they're anyway, I want to get to this last story here before we end. It's called the work from home myth. It's in the Hill. Many big brands are telling their employees to stay at home. Just recently, Google announced that it has extended its corporate work from home model through the summer of 2021, as has Uber. Sounds like a perfect utopia for those big companies, but for most of the small business owners I know, working from home will not be a new normal. It will be considered and offered. The option will be made available. And I have felt this all along, You know, when we were in the shutdown, we were doing things by Zoom, but there's just no substitute for face-to-face contact, being in the same office, talking to people face-to-face. I don't see how you can sustain any endeavor for a long time on a remote basis.
Not just from building a team of employees, but also face-to-face with clients. You know, that this is inherently a relationship business.
Right.
You know, and when you can't build those face-to-face relationships with clients, that puts a lot of strain on
things. Hurts you.
Which brings me to close out the show and to ask, we hope that you have learned something today. Our goal is to educate, guide, and empower. And we hope that you will take a look at our website. There's a button on the website that you can contact us if you have comments or questions about the financial industry or the radio show. That's a good place to go. There are plenty of other tabs to learn about Dupree Financial Group and what we do. We appreciate you listening. We will be back next week, God willing, and the creek don't rise. Thanks for listening to the Tom Dupree Show. Have a great week.